You know what I'm saying? But on the Big Booty Express, I just wanted to do that just, like I said, just for myself and just for the people that really understand what I'm trying to do. Straight from the heart, you know. Went in the studio, no ideas, just, you know, lay track for track. Whatever happened, happened. Big Booty Express. I'll go back in the day, Alleys of Your Mind by, what is it, Cybertron, yep, things like that at Metroplex Records, even back, I won't call Planet Rock techno, but, you know, like things like, that was like, you know, new sound, like the drum machines and the computer shit, but, you know what I'm saying, getting, you know, like Detroit played Planet Rock a whole lot because it was kind of close to the techno sound. It was like, all of those songs like that, Nucleus, you know, Jam On It, things like that, the old school, even Ice-T, Reckless, you know, things kind of up-tempo, but drum machine, you know, Technicolor, Metroplex. Oh, I used to love that. So it was like, you know, I had a lot of techno influence because, like I said, I liked all of these songs, you know, back to the Technicolor. I used to play these when I DJed the parties, you know, as a teenager, you know, playing these techno records. In Detroit, yeah, you had to play some type of techno record or something, or you were like a lame DJ. Techno, see, I wish I could talk to a lot of those cats because, you know, I never really had the chance to meet a lot of those, you know, from Detroit. And it's like, some of the music that they make, you know, just as well as the rap thing, you know, I used to wonder, you know, I'd be curious how they did things, you know, the mixes and, you know, which inspired the whole Big Booty Express thing. It was just, like, to get the mixes and the way that the shit sounded and the synthesizer and the drum machine.
Wisdom, experiment in stereo lives who crank the system. For the humble on the path, I paint a vision. How far will a nigga go just for attention? And to be remembered, you forgot the mission. Listen.
Take off the shoes. Take off the shoes.
Because RJ's latest arrival was one of those groups that I remember back in the day that was on tour with Run DMC. You know, and they had their own thing. They were singing, but it was still, you know, the young people were attracted to it. And, you know, as myself, that was shackles on my feet. That, you know, that was a big hit in Detroit, you know, real big. And like I said, that RJ's latest arrival, like you said, the One Ways and the groups that Angela Bofield and that started picking up that little drum machine sound and singing, you know what I'm saying?
I like working with the samplers and synthesizers and all that stuff because it's, you have infinite sound. And I think we've just really scratched the surface.
Hip-hop visade så på allvar att det var en kraft att räkna med. Året var 1984.
When Big Mouth came out, Houdini, and that song right there, I don't know what it did to my head, but it got me curious into the production. And I was like, I always wonder how they made that beat. Like, how did that beat, how, you know, it's no music in the beat, you know, it was just drums. And it was like, then right after that, I heard Roxanne. So it was like another one, like, you know, what is going on? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's different from the Evelyn Champagne King and, you know, all the stuff I was playing. You know, this was like a new thing. And it was like this rap music.
A big mouth, a big mouth.
I got so excited with it that I wanted to do it myself. And I took these little turntables, had little tape decks, and I used to just take people's records and, you know, pause and record, you know, making little patterns with it. And after a while, you know, I figured out, like, damn it, maybe I can, you know, make my own little patterns with these records, you know what I'm saying? So started doing little beats like that. And it was kind of, you know, just blending old records, like an old car wash record with funky drumming. Pause and record. And then it was like, you know, after a while, I started doing beats like that.
Yeah. This feel like that type of shit. It make you just go get the keys to your whip and just bounce. Stop at the little spot, get you a little bag of the lot, and just bounce, bounce. Yo, now watch a nigga tongue kiss the track like it was fried chicken. Spicy seasoning was finger licking. Everything looks grand and I feel so good today.
These labels were really on my back. Like, the last 2 years has been hell for me, you know, because after the Tribe, after the Slum thing, it was like the labels kept asking for a Find a Way, for a Get This Money, for a Vibrant thing. They didn't want to hear, you know, the original.
2001, efter det lyckade soloprojektet Welcome to Detroit, skrev JD på ett kontrakt med MCA och lämnade Slum Village. Saker och ting skulle dock snart gå snett på MCA, vilket bara spädde på J. Dillas bitterhet gentemot stora skivbolag. JD är nu åter en fri man. En av de tidiga milstolparna för honom var när han 96 skapade ljudkulissen åt De La Soul's gripande klagovisa över det rådande tillståndet inom hiphop. Stakes is high.
That came from also one of those old tapes that I think the Far Side got running from that same tape. Yeah, so it was like that came from one of the old batches. You know, Busta used some beats off of that for his first album. It's like Stakes is High joint. Was, I think our maybe Tip or Ali did a track where it was three bar loop, you know, which was you know, weird to me because it was like, you know, people weren't doing that. So it was like when I found this came across this Samaj Amar thing, I heard the potential in the record. I knew I wanted to mess with it, but I just didn't know how, because the timing in the Samaj Amar thing was, I think it was like 5/8. It was like some weird, you know, weird rhythm. So it was like, but I knew it could be done. But yeah, just making that beat, you know, it was just going back to me, and I was real heavy into the jazz at that time. You know, jazz and salsa, you know, anything like Sergio Mendez or Majamal. Yeah, I'd take any one of the two all day. So it was like, that's all I had in my collection, was like a lot of jazz records. And you know, that's where that came from. But it, Busta actually wanted that Stakes is High beat. It's like a lot of people wanted that track, but De La was the first person. They were the first people to get the business. Bam.
Like how Marvin Gaye had his What's Going On. He made his love songs, but he had to like chill with the love songs for a second and talk to the world. And I think that's what Stakes is High was really on.
It is. I was shocked to actually get a De La single. I was just like indifferent to pick that as a single. It was just too much. Like, yo, I can't believe, yo, that people, that even one person could take my weirdness serious.
Stakes is high when you're talking about stakes is high. You know them stakes is high when you're talking about
En overklighetskänsla infann sig hos JD när han designade titelspåret på De La Soul's fjärde album Stakes is High. 7 år tidigare hade De La Soul's 3 Feet High and Rising öppnat JD's sinnen. Det började med att Parliament Funkadelic-mannen Amp Fiddler fick ombord JD och T3 på A Tribe Called Quest's turnébuss 94. De hade ett kort möte med Q-Tip, som dock han blev upphetsad över det han hörde av Demon. Ringde senare upp JD och bad honom komma till New York. Och så blev Detroit-sonen en del av produktionslaget OMA. Var med och styrde inriktningen på vad som såg ut att bli de två sista A Tribe Called Quest-albumen.
Ever since I gave Tip the Slum Village tape, it's been a dream come true for me. You know, like I said, I never even expected him to call. But when Tip called, you know, like I said, my heart stopped, because like I said, I'm still a Tribe Called Quest diehard fan. You know, I still want to hear another Tribe Called Quest album.
But they have reunited, more or less, right?
Yes, yes, yes. See, oh yeah. See, it's like the last year, like that was the problem. They, you know, it was just I used to talk to everybody, but it was just always, you know, like I talked to Fife, he'd be like, I'm waiting for Tip. Talk to Tip, he's like, I'm waiting for Fife, you know. And it's like they just never, you know, talked. You know what I'm saying? But recently they have been talking. I tell people they're talking now, and you know the creative juices are flowing. They know that they need to do it. You know. Just for me, you know what I'm saying? I told Tip, you know, even if y'all just do it for me, you know what I'm saying? You know, I had to tell him, and I tell everybody, you know, when I told Tip, I didn't want to be a part of this new Tribe LP on the production, because I want to hear Tribe. It's good. I'm flattered, and I loved being a part of that, but I want to hear Tribe just for myself so I can be inspired.
Now I'm from the Tribe Called Quest, and I'm here tonight with the Jungle Brothers. And we about to get in this thing called Black is Black is Black is Black. Ooh, blow! Yeah, baby. Black is Black is Black is Black.
Yeah. Woo! Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Black is Black is Black is Black. Now, way back when in 68, when brothers didn't have it great, they fought back with civil rights and scars of soul. It took the sight to common foe, you plainly see. Streets or on TV, segregation was the king. Vietnam was full in swing. Martin Luther had to shout, "Blast, get out, get out, get out." The situation sort of changed, but what really makes matters strange is our foe is well disguised. We don't know where our fate lies. Still, in all, we cannot lack the fact that black is black is black.
And this movement in its modern form really started with Straight Out to Jungle, Jungle Brothers, and one specific track, Black is Black.
Oh, yes,
that's
yes,
for sure.
Yes,
yeah. I know we must hear it from you. How much input did you really have on Beats, Rhymes, and Life?
Ooh, Beats, Rhymes, and Life was... That album was like... That was my introduction to the industry. That was... I was there. See, I tell people, I felt like I was a part of A Tribe Called Quest. Even though, you know, for me to say that, you know, it's kind of weird, because like I said, I'm a Tribe Called Quest fan. I'm, you know, every album, you know, like I said, that's pushed me and that's inspired me throughout the years. So to even get a call back from that man, you know, and to be taken serious, like I said, well, to even get into it, what happened was right after the Slum tape and the demo and all of the... who did the beats and all of that, right? Tip got me out to New York, and he wanted to manage me, but he didn't know what even start. He just was like, yo, I got to get you out here. So what happened, like I said, you know, he's had me working on a few things, but I'm going to the studio with Tip, Ali, and Fife. You know, Far Side is down the hall. Common is in another room. The Roots. You know, all of these people I'm listening to. And it's like, he used to have me... Like, you know, he used to ask me opinions on things. And then after that, you know, after I felt like, damn, you know, they actually take my opinions here, you know, they're mixing something, you know, should we do this? Jay, yo, you should come do some drops, you know. And it was like I said, that was the beginning. I think the only songs they had was Phony Rappers. And it was like one more song at that time. So it was like when I walked in the studio and heard that shit, I was just like, oh, my God. It was like New Tribe Called Quest. Just happened to have some beats. You know, I used to carry cassettes all the time. That's when Fife really, you know, me and Fife started getting cool, started playing and stuff. We used to go back to the studio, just play beats, and next thing you know, wordplay. I had wordplay and Once Again, things like that on cassette. Matter of fact, I made Once Again in Tip's basement. You know, Tip was walking around the basement, as he does all the time. But then, you know, certain tracks he hears, you know, he'll come in the room like, yo, what's that? Bam, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, when I look at it, it's like, damn, you know, it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, tracks, 5 tracks on a Tribe album, you know what I'm saying? It was unbelievable because the only thing I remember that being was a Large Professor track on the Midnight Marauder that you actually seen somebody else, somebody's credit besides produced by a Tribe Called Quest.
1, 2, what you wanna do? 3, 4, cause we gonna give you more. 5, 6, and we ain't the tricks. 7, 8, and we got it straight. 9, 10, cause we make a blend. 11, 12, never ever going for sale. Yo, I got
we live in this cause it's deep in our bones. A Tribe Called Quest with the Hip Hop Jones. So sit and analyze the lyrical spray, cause all it really is wordplay.
En av JD's låtar från Tribes 1996-album Beats, Rhymes and Life. JD som säger att han inte vill jobba med Tribes återföreningsplatta. Av den enkla anledningen att han ser fram emot att få höra A Tribe Called Quest igen. Utan egen inblandning, i hopp om att få inspiration därifrån. På samma sätt som han en gång fick av The Low End Theory of Midnight Marauders. Fans kritiserade Beats, Rhymes and Life och The Love Movement för att det inte lät som gamla hederliga Tribe. Något som nog satte sina spår i JD.
It kind of affected me because I'm like, damn, you know, like maybe I shouldn't have, you know, maybe I shouldn't have got involved with the Tribe album, but, you know, that was the only way that I knew how to get heard, you know what I'm saying, at that time.
Messing me up my whole head, teasing me just like Tita did Martin. Now look at what you starting. Schoolboy crushing it, ain't on the hush. The whole world see it, but you can't. My peoples, they complain, sit and rave and rant.
Come on.
Your name is out my mouth like an ancient chant. Got me like a dog as a pause and pant.
The Uma thing kind of, you know, covered it up. You know, in the first couple of years, it was exciting. It was still cool and... you know, the Uma thing, I felt like this was another Tribe Called Quest. This is Tribe Called Quest on the production, you know what I'm saying? Instead of Tip Ali and Fife, it's Tip Ali and Jay. So it's like, you know, I didn't want to try to be Fife or try to take his place or anything like that, which a lot of people started taking to. You know, it was never like that. It was like I just wanted to be a part of the movement of what they were doing. And like I said, it was just all exciting. I was just going with the flow, rolling with the punches, and, you know, taking it as it came.
Hold tight, this is the last time you hear me. I'm out now, this is the last time to cheer me. Niggas at the game is getting too slimy. Liable to make this piece, brother, turn grimy. I'ma leave it in the hands of the slum now. Take it away from where it comes from now. A lot of you cats in the music business. Shiftless, I put you on the shit list. Did your intuition say the shit on me? I'ma just flip the rears, yo, you hear me, B? D'Angelo, play your piano. JD, flip another beat for me. Hold tight with my tear and my nigga T3. Bust a bus, watch out for who you trust. Ali Shaheed, it's your blood that I bleed. Yes, wife, for you I will give my life. It's the Uma shit for real till there's no more life. When you foul, motherfuckers, change your wrong to right. Make sure you bring the music to the area of flight. Hold tight.
Låten i vilken Q-tip lämnar över det hela till Slum Village. Från och med nu var de officiella arvtagare. Och om Uma tidigare hade kamouflerat en del av JD's insatser stegade han ut som en tydlig profil med ett sound som ingen annan. Ungefär samtidigt formades Soulquarians, en medborgarrättsrörelse inom modern svart musik. En förening av så kallade neo-soul-artister som D'Angelo, Bilal och Erykah Badu, fritänkande musiker som James Poyser och hiphoppare med öppna scenen som Common och Talib Kweli.
You know, we don't have to sign any papers, but let's form some type of you know, unit where, you know, where it's like, you know, like Tip, well, Tip actually, it was Tip's idea. You know, funny, you know, Tip was like, you know, because it was like, you know, just for the inside, it was a little tension going on with a couple of the cats, you know, a couple of cats, and I'm like, you know, I grew up listening to him, and, you know, it was a little tension in the room, but Tip noticed it, And like I said, he called a meeting, like, you know, let's squash. He's like, I don't know what's going on, but let's squash this, whatever's going on. If anybody has anything to say to anybody in here, you know, it was like 15 of us, you know, and we were just standing around in a circle. You know, nobody had anything negative to say. It was all good. We was just like, you know, everybody wanted to move in a positive direction. So, like I said, we found out that it was already a Soul Quarian thing, but we just kind of accepted all of them. You know, like I said, Mos Def and, you know, Quali-A, all of those people who I don't know. It is a certain type of music to me. Like you said, some type of civil rights type of shit, but, you know, something definitely pushing. And I think from Dead Prez to Erykah Badu, Tip, myself, Roots, I think Common, I think we all, you know, want to see this music go further, you know, and want to see what you know, how good it can get, because I don't think it's even halfway, you know, blossom, you know what I'm saying? It's so much more. It's so much music out here, so much more to do, you know what I'm saying? So I think that was the point of forming the whole crew.
Let's go right, left, left, right. Oh. Yeah. Middle passage connection. Yeah. About to build. Come on. Come on. Tell you which way to go. No control of our soul, we all wait at the light. So craft the bowl that we hit in the fight to make it right. Late at night, I'm controlled by the DJ on the mic. I love hip hop, and every joint he playing is tight. A day in the life is a brick in the foundation I'm like. A mason in Egypt, amazing when I'm creating a site for the world to behold and a story to last. So one day ghetto children can visit the glorious past. After Pac and Notorious past, what did we have? Niggas worth more when they dead, it's so sad. Started with the slavery, we finished the plan. But I broke the cycle and became a man. Part of people put a hand in the sky. Grab a cloud and squeeze till no man is dry. We wetted up while asking people if they planning to die. They can't stand to live, consumers planning to buy. Slow death.
En av JD's insatser på Talib Kweli's starka quality, Stand to the Side. Fröna till Slum Village såddes i Detroits Pershing High School, där Barton och T3 byggde upp rykten som MCs. JD begav sig dit för att utmana dem båda över lite old school jams, var det tänkt. Men istället bildade de tillsammans med YG och QD en grupp med namnet Brothers of Centripode.
I heard about T3 and Barton. When I was in high school doing these parties, I was also... See, what I tell people was weird about me, when I started pause and record beats, I was also writing rhymes. For myself, you know what I'm saying? Just writing little rhymes or bust a little rap in school against somebody battling. You know, I was into the whole B-boy breaking thing. So I heard about T3 and Baten, and they went to another high school, like on another side of town where I stayed. So I had this style called the stutter style, you know what I'm saying? I used to rap and stutter, like, you know. So that was my thing. I, you know, known a little part of Detroit for that. T3, on the other hand, had a rap about Shaka Zulu or something that everybody used to tell me about. Everybody used to come to me, like, yo, this guy named Trace, he crazy, he blah, blah, blah. He's supposed to, okay. So I'm like, yo, okay, one day we're going to go up and challenge him. So I goes up to challenge T3, and what we ended up doing was we went from the school to T3's house, T3's grandmother's house. And she was very strict, you know what I'm saying? But she'll let us come over from 3 to 5 p.m., you know. Go in the basement, don't make too much noise. But so the first day when we went, we were supposed to battle, but we ended up taking a trip to a record store and buying some breakbeat albums and going back to T3's crib and just rhyming, like freestyling to cassette, like over all these little Simon Harris beats, actually, you know what I'm saying? So that's actually how I started. And it was like we hooked up every day doing the same thing. And like months went past and it was just like, you know, we didn't even have to say it because it was like what we had was something different. It was like we were very inspired by the leaders of the new school. And back then it was like, you know, real excited rap. But that's basically where Slum started.
One, two. One, two. Don't sell yourself to fall in love. Things you do. Oh.
Besjälat Slum Village-ögonblick, Fall in Love från Fantastic Volume 2, som levde ett liv på bootlegs innan den äntligen officiellt gavs ut 2000. Det var typiskt att JD, Barton och T3 möttes med avsikten att battla, för då i slutet av 80-talet tillhörde trion de mest begåvade på Detroits framväxande open mic-scen. Slum fick ett kontrakt med en liten lokal etikett, men inget hände förrän de själva lyckades prångla ut en råa Fantastic volym 1. JD's framgångar som innovatör ledde till spänningar inom gruppen, samtidigt som det öppnade upp dörrar för dem. Men när konsertarrangörer annonserade trion som Slum Village featuring JD och kritiker skrev att Slum inte behövde MCs, att man lika bra kunde vara utan de intetsägande texterna, då försämrades stämningen. Sedan hade JD problem med Bartons mentala frånvaro. Ofta svävade han ovan de andra i ett moln av mysticism och egenhändigt ihopsnickrad religion.
I can't explain it. I'm talking about everything changes. I mean, supreme changes. You wouldn't believe it.
Barton, T3 och JD hittade sig själva i den unika andliga gemenskap som uppstod inom Slum. Det fanns något osynligt bakom micken.
You know, that's one thing about us. I won't say closer than a lot of rap groups, because I don't know, you know, but we have a, it was a marriage, you know, like I tell people, this, I hear a lot of people say that, but like what I have with T3 and Baten, like I said, they can't understand that, you know, me not being around this last trip, you know, it was nothing like personal or bitter, like with us, because like I said, this year we you know, we're still doing it again, you know, it was like we just had creative differences at that time, you know, but as far as us, like that's where the Trinity comes from, that's what the word is like, you know, and then we took a lot of spiritual classes, and you know, like we grew together in a lot of spiritual ways that, you know, like a lot of rap groups, what people just don't do.
Senaste Slum Village-albumet gjordes utan JD som fast medlem. Battle-erfarne MC'n Elsie, som hördes på Welcome to Detroit, blev den nya tredje medlemmen.
It's been so long and so many rejections. So, I mean, even from Tip, getting on with Tip, you know, that's my man, I love him, but, you know, he wasn't interested in the Slum, you know what I'm saying? He wanted to know who did the tracks. But, you know, just like, you know, the guys rapping was kind of crazy, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, I didn't consider it crazy, because, like, it was the same format when I make my production. It was just free-filling. You know, we go in the studio, we might freestyle a whole song. You know, just, I do the beat right there, let's freestyle it. And what happened was we started pressing these things up, and people started getting copies and accepting it as Slum Village.
You know, if you make moves, some people will envy. You know, people say shit about you and me. Uh-huh, what's up with this jealousy? Uh-huh, what's up with this jealousy?
One more time.
Uh-huh, what's up with this jealousy?
Jealousy make you say what the f***?
This goes out to the niggas talking the shit. Same nigga that be dubbing tapes and walking the shit. No life, having like a nigga that's stalking a bitch. No joke, broke y'all niggas be backing me up. Play hating plots, planning on jacking me up. Don't do it, you don't know these niggas is backing me up. Hardcore, fuck rap, clapping the gat, nigga, what? Hardcore, pimp smack him up and mackin' him wood. Good shit, like 55 in the back of the bus. Hot shit, SV, your shrack to fuck. Don't get jealous, cause the S is stacking the bus. Say what, say you know.
Historia mot futurism, en konflikt som JD känner av varje gång han sätter sig bakom kontrollbordet i källaren. Vill inte upprepa något som han gjort förut. De kompromisser som han tvingats till av skivbolag har han ibland lyckats plocka bort sitt namn ifrån. Ska han styra upp mot techno-himlen eller ska han ner i funk-sjutummarnas träsk?
I may have thought about Staple Singers, Piece of the Action, you know, songs like that where you hear them and it's like the claps all through the song and loud and offbeat, you know, things like that. That's what moves me, and that's what gets me to take it to the next level. You know, don't program the claps, put them live on the track. You know, just things like that, man. You know, just to give it another feel. Yeah.
At the same time, you really feel the funkiness in the stops and the silence, the atmosphere. That's funky.
Yeah, thanks. You know, once again, that inspiration comes from Tribe De La. You know, it's like to hear when I heard the first De La album, it was like the interludes and the way it was put together was so different. You know, it's nothing I heard before. Nothing I've ever heard before. Like, even to the Tribe, you know, the stuff they were doing, it was like nothing I heard before.
J.D. om start, stop, funk, soul, klapp och uppstickad atmosfär. En av J.D.'s finaste stunder ligger på Erykah Badus tvåa Mama's Gun. Upptäckte snart att det var något helt annat att gå in i studion med en framgångsrik soulsångerska jämfört med de rappare som han tidigare jobbat med. Inspirerades av ett gammalt Tamika Blue-nummer och lät en polare improvisera fram bongolir.
Like what I was looking for was something more on and on thing. Like, you know, more where she came from, but with the JD feel, you know, if you will. So it was like what she wanted to do. Like I said, once again, you know, like some artists have their vision. So it's like what she wanted to do something totally like nothing like she's done before.
It's a result of inviting millions and billions of memory atoms, atomic memory, into the music.
You know, and it's kind of, you know, you have the labels fighting with you, like saying, you know, like that's cool, but, you know, just get a little more, you know, soulful in it. You know, you have all of this conflict, you know, and it's like for me myself, I always like to make the artist, you know, make sure that they're satisfied with what I give. You know, me wanting to be an artist myself, you know, I know what I would want to look for in a producer, you know, somebody that basically can give me what I need or what I'm looking for that can finish this picture. So, like I said, the Didn't You Know track, that was the closest to, you know, to me, you know, that was the closest that she picked, actually. You know, that would relate to her last music. And like you said, people didn't know that I did it because it wasn't, you know, they didn't have any high energy or didn't have a broken break beats. It was just, you know, kind of like a raw loop. But, you know, if people heard the Tamika Blue record where we got the record from, you know, and then listen to Erykah Badu, they'd be like, oh, okay, now I get it. You know, now we get it. Okay, damn.
Renaissance enligt JD. Didn't you know med Erykah Badu. JD bidrog med något som varken Tribe eller Roots hade. Något mer vrickat och metafysiskt. En ljudkuliss som skapar illusionen av en nutida Black Power-rörelse i slumbyn. Där den negativa härskar, där du helst ska rappa om pengar och pistoler för att någon ska lyssna. JD är motkraften och just nu satsar han på samarbeten med folk från Detroits house- och techno-världar. Något som skulle ha varit omöjligt för några år sedan.
We're just starting to become a city where we can work together. You know, it's kind of crazy. everybody in Detroit was kind of like I am. It's like we kind of keep to ourselves in our own world and do our thing. But when we get together, you know, it's all good. But now, like I said, more people starting to hook up. Like Carl Craig just did like a hip-hop compilation, you know, things like that where before, you know, they might have just stuck to the techno. They might have just did a whole techno compilation. But now they have, you know, my man Kareem Riggins, Amp Fiddler, as I discussed earlier, the guy who taught me how to work the MP, having all of these cats collab and do things. So I think it's definitely getting better. And then even with the Eminem movement, I say, you know, even with that,
the American Dream is already fucked up. All I'm doing is exposing it.
It's kind of making, you know, waking us up, you know, kind of, you know, getting us together and getting these singers and these rappers and these producers moving and getting them out there, you know. Like, I just recently hooked up with a lot of different people that I never imagined myself hooking up with out of Detroit.
Uh-huh. Yo. Uh-huh. Seems like I've been hustling for years, facing serious beers, working for a shit job, try to do for my kids, and my baby mom's trip.
This message is intended for all Quebecers. We must take extreme measures to curb the pandemic. Only essential services remain open. Gatherings are prohibited. It's forbidden to leave your home between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. These efforts aim to protect our healthcare workers, seniors, and loved ones. Let's comply with the lockdown and curfew to lower the risk of contracting COVID-19, because our health is important. For more information, visit quebec.ca/confinement. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Great pleasure to welcome you along to the show,
oh,
JD.
Oh, thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
No, it's a real pleasure. There's so many of the tunes you've been doing, you know, over the past few years that have been played on the show, much requested. And
okay. That's good.
Well, no, it's, yeah. You know, I was saying to you, you know, before we got in the studio, there's some... there's definitely a sound that you've got, which I think people over here, and obviously in the States, really, really like, you know. The thing is, it is a spectrum, do you know what I mean? From the stuff you've done with Q-Tip,
right.
The Breathing Stops, which are more sort of party rocking,
right.
To the Erica stuff, to the Common stuff, to the Slum, you know.
Right,
it's,
right.
And then on the new album, the one that you're here right. to promote, Welcome to Detroit, which is forthcoming on BBE,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's, there's some mad little tunes on there, do you know what I mean? You know, there's tracks
right.
which had shown an influence in some of the other records,
mm-hmm.
but you know, tracks like Think Twice and tracks like Brazilian Groove
right.
have got their, you know, they speak for themselves, do you know what I mean?
Right.
The sort of Mazelle
right.
Brothers take and that, and coming out and doing them outright is
yeah.
well, right. great for me and great for many people over here. But before we get into talking about the new album and a lot of stuff, I wanted to take it right back
okay.
and just sort of ask you how you, you know, what, how you got into music, what a young JD was listening to. And, you know, the influences in Detroit and...
Okay. Well, we started back, like, my father used to take me every week and buy me a 45, 7-inch record. So
okay.
that's how I started. I mean, this is back when I can... before I can remember, you know what I'm saying? Really,
yeah.
I mean. And that's how I started. So I was actually doing parties at the age of 5, 6 with the help of my older sister, but I had all the records.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So they used to bring
what
parties.
What sort of stuff was he buying you?
Like, that was back when, what was I remember buying Open Sesame, Cool in the Gang. It was something else I bought. I can just remember. Parliament, it was one of Parliament Funkadelic records. That was back when it was real hot, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, but really, he used to buy a lot of Jack McDuff.
Okay.
James Brown.
Right.
It was a mixture of both, like jazz and funk in the house. Then my mother being she was trying to be an opera singer as a youngster. So with her classical influences.
Okay.
Funk, jazz, all kind of music playing around the crib. So
it was a musical house. Did your dad play any instruments?
Yeah, he played upright bass.
Okay.
Also keyboards and, you know.
And was he in any bands or did he put any stuff out or
yeah.
was it just more?
If you ever heard the song, It's a Shame.
Okay.
It's a Shame.
Detroit?
Yeah.
Anyway,
he actually co-wrote that song.
Oh,
and,
really?
And, so that's a little story, so.
Cool. And at the age of 6, you sort of doing little parties and...
Yeah, doing parties and...
That's quite hard
right,
for
yeah, really. Yeah, you know, so that just, the love right there. My older sister had a boyfriend who was a DJ, so that's how I got into... wanted to being interested in two turntables and so forth.
Right.
which led to Beats.
Yeah.
The you know, just curiosity on how it was done and how Beats were created. And
so you sort of got into the DJing thing with your sister's boyfriend, sort of influenced you, and then you what sort of time period is this?
This is before, I know I was, this is around 86, 87.
Okay.
86, around that time, that's when I really got into wanting to be a DJ.
Right.
Jazzy Jeff, Fresh Prince was out, you know, I wanted to be a DJ, Jam Master J.
Yeah. So you got into the cutting and scratching and...
I wanted to be a DJ at that time. So, like I said, I just wanted to know how the beats were done. I didn't know how it was done. I just knew that I can hear it.
Yeah.
So just out of curiosity, actually sampling other people's music, you know, that's how we do. But take drum breaks from other people, record us out or whatever, loop your own thing. That's how I got started. And then, you know, by digging, collecting old records that I already had, you know, before. And then friends of mine gave me records or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I really got into this beat thing.
And what did you still, you know, did you get an MPC back then, or was you just knocking about?
Actually, yeah, I was on a tape deck. I was making beats on tape decks.
Okay.
Just to pause and record thing. So a friend of mine showed me how to work the MPC about a year into doing this tape deck thing. Showed me how to work the MPC 62.
Okay.
Which was out, I think, 90 something.
Right.
So
I suppose for people who are listening who don't know, the MPC is a drum machine.
It's a drum machine, it's made by Akai, you know. Yeah.
It's a bit of an industry standard, isn't it?
Yeah. That's like almost like an SP-1200.
Yeah.
If you knew about that one.
Do you use the SP-1200 much?
Yes.
Is it the two things that are sort of basis of what you...
Yeah, I actually, before the MPC 62, I was using an SP-12 from the same friend. He used to let me borrow this SP-12, so...
And you know, sort of moving on to sort of making the beats, did you have anything out on local labels in Detroit, or what was the sort of moves into actually being into DJing and making beats to getting the first records out? What was the first track you produced that came out?
A joint for Fat Cat. It's called Day in the Life with the Homies. A Day with the Homies. And this B-side was Front Street.
Okay.
Yeah, back in the days. That was my first release. And that was right before, about a half a year before Far Side Cuts.
So how did you get it out onto Payday? Was it a deal that Fat Cat had with Payday, or was... you knew him from... Is he
from Detroit? Me and Fat was working together. He had a partner before.
Okay.
So we used to work together, and actually the same cat that taught me how to work the MPC, he used to let us come over and record, so...
Right.
All of this story has a lot to do with this guy, Amp Fiddler, who let us come in and do our thing, basically. So, but Fat Cat, like I said, we worked before, and we put out, some wax... What year? I can't think of the year. I'm bad with the years, but... Put out some vinyl, basically, sold them on the streets of the D, straight out the basement.
Yeah.
Got Fuzzy from Universal. Just happened to be in Detroit. Heard about the buzz. I don't know how he got with Fat Cat.
Yeah.
But make a long story short, they hooked up. And
I'm always quite interested, because there's like quite a big scene in England of, you know, the sort of people in checking all their sort of independent hip-hop and stuff like that. And it always fascinates me how the... I mean, I suppose it's fairly obvious, really, how you go from the independent to the major.
Right.
But there's quite a gulf between them, do you know what I mean? There's a lot of people who have been making a lot of records on independent labels that never get picked up by the major, and it just interests me, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
I suppose it's fairly self-explanatory, because the stuff you do is wicked, and some of the other stuff but some of the stuff is good as well, do you know what I mean? Right. It sort of never gets through, but I suppose it's just a case of A&R people picking up on it. And
yes, it's hard. It's definitely hard. I mean, I had the worst time. I mean, it's taken since 95 to now to get here. It's just, when you want to do what you want to do, and you got something new, they're scared of it. Everybody's always scared of it, until you got a blockbuster artist or whatever using the, you know what I'm saying, production. You got a Buster, you got an Erykah Badu, then they accept it. I understand it now. But I was shopping Slum Village demos when I first was even trying to get into the door. I was shopping Slum Village demos, and no doors were open. People I worked for in production, in this industry, like working for artists, they hear it it's all good, but no.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You it's know, quite safe.
Yeah, it's unless you have a following, they're not going to accept it.
Yeah. So I mean, going back to the whole sort of Detroit thing, that the sort of, you know, the two bases of hip hop that had been for a long time was New York, right, and LA, and obviously all that's changed now with the whole sort of, you know, the whole Philly thing,
yeah,
and then the thing, you know, with Timberland and the Southern sort of thing. But I mean, the scene in Detroit, you know, obviously now you look back and it's like, oh, well, there's Eminem, and
right,
there must
right.
have been something going on there for ages. But for a long time, it wasn't really, there weren't a lot of things that I was hearing of that were coming out of Detroit. I mean, how did the scene operate in Detroit? Was it like just little jams and parties? And
yeah, it was. We had a basically a small, a very small, I guess you could say, hip hop community. I don't want to use it, but I guess we only met at certain places. Maurice Malone had a lot to do with, he started a lot of the hip-hop shop and the open mics that Eminem used to go to back in the day. A lot of artists, you know what I'm saying, that's coming up right now. And it's people that we all know each other from those little places, those little couple of clubs. So, you know, basically the hip-hop percentage is about 2%. You know, it's
in Detroit,
techno and R&B, and you know,
it's quite freaky, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's sort of one place that you know, I mean, techno relatively in the rest of America is quite sort of marginal. Do you know
right,
what I mean? You
yeah.
know, it's the other way around.
Right,
really.
right. But nah, not there.
It's quite a. I mean, I went there once, and it we were listening to like Derek May driving around the city, and it did seem to be, it suited the mood of the place. Do you know what
right,
I mean? It's
right.
all a bit. It
yeah, it
a
does.
Run
does.
Down and yeah. deserted and. The eeriness of those records.
Yeah.
I mean, was that something you were sort of checking when you were growing up? I suppose if 90.
Yes.
You know, if your hip hop's 2%, then you're gonna
right,
have to
right.
be.
Right. Yeah. It's like that's all we had was these clubs, it's techno clubs. I mean, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know
yeah,
what I'm
yeah,
saying?
Yeah.
I mean, if I have time, I dibble dabble on the machine. You know.
Yeah. yeah. Well, sense, as we've seen know. On with your
right
the BBE
yeah,
track.
Yeah.
On the
yeah.
Album.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that music, do you know what I mean? I
yeah.
can see the funk in it, and I love the futuriness of it.
Right.
Like I was saying to you before we came into the studio about the Q-Tip tracks, I think it's All In and those sort
yeah,
of things.
Yeah, right.
They really have that feel to it, and that's why I'm so glad you came in, because when I was listening to them, I was like, oh, this sounds like, you know, it's like, I knew you was from Detroit,
right.
and it sounds really techie. Mm-hmm. And then interesting listening to what else is going on in hip-hop, you know, I mean, I got the Memphis Bleek album
right.
and some of those right. things. And obviously the Timberland stuff.
Yeah,
there is a
yeah,
real
yeah.
techie. I mean, what do you think that is? Why do you think that's?
I think
it's just moving on.
Yeah, I think it's just moving on. New sounds. You know, I know myself. I don't even want to use a Fender Rhodes, and again, if I can help it. So it's just probably people just growing and trying different things.
Well, it's interesting because yeah. There's a show on a slot on the show that we do, and recently we made Charles Erland our artist of
oh,
the
yeah.
week. And I was listening to this track called Intergalactic Love Song, and it's him using arps and all that sort of stuff. And you sort of think, listening back, it's almost like what you're doing now is what they were doing then, in terms of, you know, an arp was a brand new piece
yeah.
of kit, and then you listen to Stevie Wonder, Songs in the Key of Life, and,
yeah,
you know,
man.
Embracing all that technology. And it's just, you know, I love hearing these new sounds, do you know what I mean? And I think it's good to hear you say things like, I mean, I love the Fender Rhodes, do you know what I mean?
Right,
but
right,
it's
right.
an instrument from... You know,
yeah,
I don't know when
yeah.
it was invented, but it's been around for a while.
It's been around. It's a lot of new things, right, that you could play with. I know. And speaking of a couple of producers like Rock Wilder,
yeah.
who, you know, took me by surprise. I didn't even know, you know what I'm saying, because I hadn't heard production like his.
It's crazy.
So that's what I like in a, you know, a producer, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you can bring something to the table.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, do you think there's anything going on in the clubs that's influenced the change in sound, or do you think it's just the way hip-hop sort of moves on?
Club has a lot to do with it.
Because it's a lot more, you know, I mean, that's why I said the two things, there's more than two things, but
yeah.
the sides of what you do, there's a lot of, like, home sort of chilled
right.
stuff.
Right.
And then the breathing stops, which are a lot more sort of jump up and
right.
bouncing and...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm about to say it. Sometimes you can make things, well, I won't say for the wrong reason, but, you know, just for that, like a producer can make a joint just for the club. I mean, that's what... people do, just because it's so important in this industry and in this numbers and the sales, and you know what I'm saying, that's what the labels look for. So cats like Rockwilder, Timberland,
yeah.
who do it in their own way, you know what I'm saying, I'm not mad at that, you know.
Do you have much to do, I mean, do you, I mean, I don't know, but I just think it'd be quite interesting to hear a conversation between you and Timbaland.
Right. And I actually, that's one of the cats I haven't hooked up with. I met almost everybody, but I'm waiting to hook up with that cat.
Yeah, he's done some pretty mad stuff, hasn't he? And yeah, Neptunes as well, I think, are coming on that sort of new...
Yeah, got a new sound.
And the Neptunes on that Kellis album, it reminded me, there's some beautiful little tracks on there, like Suspended or whatever, where they just, they get into that same sort of groove that I associate with you, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Old but new.
That's what it's about.
Well, sort of going back to sort of the whole story and that, the sort of, in the first big record you worked on was the Lab Cabin California.
Right.
Farside record.
Right.
How did that come about? Because they're based in L.A.
Yeah. Actually, they were actually in New York working on the album. They just started.
Yeah.
And Q-Tip was my manager at that time.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you get to a cut with Q-Tip?
Through a Lollapalooza concert in Detroit.
Right.
Here comes the name again. Amp Fiddler, the guy from the basement, NPC and all, texts me to a Tribe Called Quest concert out of the blue. I hadn't talked to Amp in about a few months. You know, that was my man, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But he went on the road with the Parliament for this tour. So he called me out the blue. Make a long story short, took me straight to the Q-Tip, handed him a tape, Slum Village tape, that I was actually shopping, but he was interested in the production.
Right.
So we took it from there. Like a week later, he was my manager. So about a month later, that's when I was in the studio with Farside.
So, okay.
And we actually did the first few sessions in New York, and then we went to Cali.
Running. Was that a beat that you'd had for a while, or was that a sort of...
That
how
was
did
like,
you work with them? Was it you, you just took the beats in and they were like, yeah, Wicked will have that?
Yeah, basically. Okay. make it a little easier, but like getting into Running, that's when I started listening to like Sergio Mendez. I wasn't
Stan Getzler.
Yeah. See, I wasn't into that music, you know what I'm saying? I only heard funk, R&B, jazz, but not really.
So the whole sort of digging thing and sort of going off on little tangents and getting into different areas sort of has affected
Definitely got me open. Yeah, I'm open to like a lot of things now.
Looking at like the Common album,
right?
And a lot of those productions that for people who don't know, what is it?
That was, the meaning is community of brotherhood.
Okay.
So that would go apply to me, Q-Tip, and Ali Shaheed of a Tribe Called Quest.
Okay.
And we actually formed this production crew at the Trackmasters was big around the time we formed it. And that was actually one of the reasons why we did it, to kind of, bring the funk, the good feeling music back into the radio waves.
Right.
Because
right.
It was just Trackmaster heaven, you know what I'm saying, at that time. So, you know, we was like, just, we got to put a name
out
there.
Native Tongues was the thing that seemed to, that would held all like De La Soul and Jungle Brothers and Tribe Called Quest together back then.
Yeah, right.
Is it sort of like almost an updated version of that, but just with on the producers?
Yeah.
Side? Because it's that sort of vibe, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It definitely follows on from the tribe-y sort of feel.
Definitely. And actually, we had another member, Rafael Sadiq, who joined the UMA right before the company. You know, we all went our separate ways because the Lucy Pearl thing, the Tip thing, the JD thing. You know,
it's almost like a split in two.
Yeah, but it's we are still family. But that just it was something. It was an idea that Q-Tip really had, you know, originally, and he wanted to do and just didn't know how to do it. We didn't know how to do it the right way. We just went into it because it was a good idea.
And was it was it almost like you all just got in the studio to, you know, you were you doing stuff together and mixes
I do a beat, Tipper put a hi-hat on it, whatever, crash, mix it, Ali put whatever, you know, it was just all together. If Ali did something and the drums weren't banging enough, just to, you know, Jay, do this, whatever, you know.
So it's a real little team.
Yeah, we looked out for each other. Yeah.
And when did that all get together? And what were the things you were working? You know, what were the projects that sort of came out of the initial?
The Q-Tip album, you know, things like that.
Well, the Q-Tip album leads us on quite nicely to, because I mean that album freaked me.
Okay.
I thought it was amazing.
Oh, good.
I thought it was really good. You know, it was it surprised me as well. I mean, tracks like Breathe and Stop were big tunes, but when I was in the States, I was asking people, and people said that it didn't seem to be as received as well as I imagined it would have been, because I thought it would have just gone through the roof, because the singles that came off it, the first couple,
were, you know,
just
what?
Killer club tunes.
People were just not happy with seeing Q-Tip in that light.
Yeah.
There's no way, I mean, because I think he did a good job with the album, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Myself, as a fan of Q-Tip, you know what I'm saying? I mean, but everywhere I went, it's like, people were like, nah, the beats were cool, but I don't like
it. One of the other things I wanted to talk about was the use of samples and the way that, that hip-hop used to be, you know, the sort of Pete Rock, and even before that, they were just using the break, the bass line, the hook.
Right.
The sort of the looking at the front door type of loop scenario, do you know what I mean?
Right.
And what you're doing now is using a lot less of the actual sample, but just chopping it in a much more sort of creative and...
Right.
It really fascinates me, because I love the move. I just wondered what prompted it, and I was wondering if it was like a sort of move away from trying to clear samples, because it's not such an obvious... They're almost like sound sources, do you know what I mean?
I was going to say that has a lot to do with it, because they have these scouts now that actually listen for samples.
Really?
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of producers know that, so we try to get away from it. I mean, and if we're going to use a sample, if I'm going to use a sample and clear it, I mean, it's going to be freaked to the maximum, so, you know, you might not even hear any of it, but you know, I'm gonna use it. I'm not just gonna loop it. I don't like that.
Cause in a way, it's like the evolution of the music. Do you know what I mean? And the drum programming as well, I suppose. The fact that, you know, all right, so you get a drum machine or a sampler and you load in a big chunk because you can do it.
Right, right.
But then after a while, do you know what I mean? It's just like, well, what are we gonna do? What are we gonna do next? And I think the way that all the beats are sort of programmed in and stuff just seems it's really. It's just funky, do you know what I mean? Really syncopated, and it's definitely a good sound, and it just intrigued me. And we've already spoke about the sort of the equipment and the sort of the MPC thing, because I suppose that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, that has a lot to do with it. Yep. The type of machine you use definitely has a lot to do with your sound. I got this one cat from Detroit who's using a 2000 MPC. I've never heard beats that sound like that.
Really?
Sonically, so... It has a lot to do with it. No, he's an up-and-coming cat, so YG.
What's his name?
Yeah, about to say, look out for YG. He's definitely on my
team. Has he got any stuff coming out?
Actually, he's just working on a new Buster joint with me. So, so he will have some stuff out. This will be his first,
first release. I'll look out for that. Yeah. Another thing that really fascinates me about, you know, hip-hop, and I suppose American music in general, is just like the sort of the production sound of it. It always sounds really big and really heavy, do you know what I mean? It's, I don't know, what is it? Is it just the way of EQ, or the way of compressing or EQing? What makes them sound what makes them sound better than most of the English records?
You know what? Yeah, they really take that to heart. They take it serious over there. It's like, I remember mastering the Slum Village album. What they do is, like, I know when I mix stuff, I mean, sometimes it comes out big, sometimes it doesn't, but the Slum Village album, it was really like basement quality. But they take it and just expand it in this mastering plant, whatever, what have you. It's just like...
Is this when you're mastering it or when you're mixing it?
Yeah, when you're mastering.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and...
What place is like?
Like a Sterling Sound.
Tom
Coyne.
When your parents need your help, you're there. When your kids say something's wrong, you're there. When your friends have a rough day, you're there. Be there for yourself the way you're there for others, as it's normal for these uncertain times to bring out negative emotions or anxiety. If you're finding it difficult to carry out daily tasks, there are solutions. Visit quebec.ca/gettingbetter or call Info Sociale 811. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Buck and Roberge, and we'd like to formally invite you to listen to our brand new single, The BPR Strut. Barry Paquin Roberge, join us, you'll be fine.
Hello WCKUT 90.3 FM.
It's a story that you tell.
You are the media.
You then are the media.
You now are the media. Are the media.
Find out who you are at CKUT 90.3 FM.
Descent through sound.
Descent through sound.
Descent through sound.
Looking for media and its reflection.
Descent through sound.
Join us for general orientation every third Thursday, 12, 3, and 6 p.m.
3647 University, CKUT 90.3 FM.
Oh, they're very shrewd. I must say, they're really quite remarkable in their ability to use the media.
When your parents need your help, you're there. When your kids say something's wrong, you're there. When your friends have a rough day, you're there. Be there for yourself the way you're there for others, as it's normal for these uncertain times to bring out negative emotions or anxiety. If you're finding it difficult to carry out daily tasks, there are solutions. Visit quebec.ca/gettingbetter or call Info Sociale 811. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news, brought to you live.